The Book of Revelation. Who wrote it? Written by Bart Ehrman. Read by Ken Teutsch. Now that I have summarized the Book of Revelation, it's not that difficult to follow the basic structure of the narrative, we get to the thorny question of who wrote it, when, and why. In this post, we will deal with the who. The author of Revelation certainly claims to be John. But there were numerous Johns in the early Christian community. Which one was he? He does give some information about himself. 1:9. He is the brother of the Christians he is addressing, and he shares their tribulation as he writes to them from the island of Patmos, off the west coast of Asia Minor. Since his readers knew him, he had no need to explain any further who he was. Later readers, however, have tried to figure out his identity. John was a common name in Jewish circles before it was often taken up by non-Jewish Christians, and this author does not claim to be any particular John. He does not, for instance, claim to be the most famous John of all, the son of Zebedee, one of the 12 disciples of Jesus. Throughout his narrative, in fact, he appears to indicate he was not a member of the original apostolic band. In chapter 4, for example, when he ascends to heaven, he sees 24 human elders surrounding the throne of God, worshiping him day and night. These are commonly understood to be the 12 patriarchs of Israel, representing the original people of God, and the 12 apostles of Jesus, representing the new people of God. If so, John is surely not seeing himself. Some writers of the early church mention two prominent figures named John, Jesus' own disciple, who was taken to be the author of the fourth gospel, and the elder John, who wrote Revelation. These books do have radically different writing styles, so that it is unlikely they were written by the same person. Their differences have been recognized for, 18 centuries. The case was made most compellingly around 260 CE by a prominent bishop of Alexandria named Dionysius. In a long letter quoted by the 4th century church historian Eusebius, Church History 7.25, Dionysius begins his assessment of Revelation by pointing out that some earlier church leaders had spurned the writing, in part because no one could make sense of it. Some of our predecessors rejected the book and pulled it entirely to pieces, criticizing it chapter by chapter, pronouncing it unintelligible and illogical, and the title false. They say it is not a revelation at all, since it is heavily veiled by its thick curtain of incomprehensibility. Since the apostles communicated their message clearly for the benefit of their readers, Dionysius's predecessors argued the so-called revelation could not have been produced by John or any other member of the apostolic band. Some came to think it had been forged in John's name by an infamous Christian heretic named Corinthus. His reason for doing so? To provide an allegedly apostolic sanction for his sensual lifestyle. This, they say, was the doctrine Corinthus taught, that Christ's kingdom would be on earth, and the things he lusted after himself, being the slave of his body and sensual through and through, filled the heaven of his dreams, unlimited indulgence in gluttony and lechery at banquets, drinking bouts, and wedding feasts. Dionysius himself is not inclined to reject the book outright, since other Christians hold it in high regard, and he humbly, coyly, disingenuously, suggests that he is possibly simply too thick to understand it. He goes on to say that since the author calls himself John, he sees no reason to deny that was his name. But I am not prepared to admit that he was the apostle, the son of Zebedee and brother of James, who wrote the gospel entitled According to John and the general epistle, that is, 1 John. His main reason for assigning it to some different John was its linguistic style and general tone. Toward the end of his letter, Dionysius provides a philological comparison of Revelation with the other Johannine writings, using arguments that scholars even today could and often do agree with. By the phraseology also, we can measure the difference between the gospel and epistle and the revelation. The first two are written not only without any blunders in the use of Greek, but with remarkable skill as regards diction, logical thought, and orderly expression. It is impossible to find in them one barbarous word or solecism or any kind of vulgarism. For Dionysius, this clarity and quality of style stand in stark contrast with what we find in the book of Revelation. Unlike the Apostle John, the man really just can't write, so it must be a different author. The views expressed by Dionysius struck a chord with many church leaders in the East, not surprisingly, since they were reading the books of the New Testament in Greek. The West mainly used Latin. It was well over a century before the book came to be accepted more widely as a part of Scripture. For it to be accepted as Scripture, it obviously had to be written by an apostle, not just by some fellow named John. How did church leaders decide this John really was the son of Zebedee? Not through historical analysis. They instead first decided it should be Scripture, and then realized that, therefore, it must have been written by the disciple John. So then the big question is, why did they end up wanting it in the New Testament? This acceptance was driven by several factors. For one thing, Revelation proved useful for Orthodox thinkers during the great theological controversies of the 4th century. The most significant debate involved the nature of Christ. Was he a divine being who was subordinate to God the Father? A second-level divinity who came into existence at some point in the eternity past? Or was he completely equal with God the Father in power and fully eternal? The latter position eventually won out, and the book of Revelation proved useful to that end. As I have noted, God identifies himself as the Alpha and the Omega twice in the book, 1:8 and 21:6. So too does Christ. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the first and the last, the beginning and the end, 22:13. If both God and Christ claim to be the beginning and end of all things, they are then equal and both fully eternal, at least in the argument of the Orthodox theologians. Another factor leading to the acceptance of the book involved the spiritualized reading of Revelation popularized by the great authoritative figure Augustine. As we have seen in this reading, the book is not about upcoming calamities still, which will end with the sensual glories of a literal thousand-year reign of Christ and his saints. The millennium is happening now. Jesus' followers have been made alive in the Spirit and been granted power over the forces of evil. The devil cannot touch those with the Spirit of Christ. If that's what the book means, if it was not, in fact, a celebration of a coming age of exquisite banquets and exotic pleasures, then for many ancient readers there was no real obstacle to taking it as apostolic. Once that hurdle was cleared, church leaders became more forgiving of writing style and came to think that it probably was written by the Apostle John, the son of Zebedee, after all. As with all the books of the Bible, there was no actual vote at a worldwide church council to include Revelation in Scripture. It came to be accepted more or less as a matter of informal consensus. Doubts lingered, however, and as I have indicated, the book was not widely read over the centuries. Well over a millennium later, at the time of the Protestant Reformation, when Martin Luther produced his classic German translation of the Bible, he placed Revelation in an appendix, along with three other books, Hebrews, Jude, and James, because he did not think that they preached Christ. That is, he did not think Revelation presented the ideas of Christ's salvation adequately, or at all. It was, therefore, he believed, not authoritative on the level of the other books of the New Testament. Now that we have discussed who wrote the book, we still have to figure out when it was written and why. And for that, we need to dig more deeply into its interpretation, which we'll cover in the next post.